House Committee on Education will come to order. Welcome. If you have a cell phone with you, if you could please turn your cell phone not just to off, but all the way to silent. The Capitol recording system gets disrupted by the vibrations that come through the air for cell phones, and I do understand that there are many people listening to this hearing on the internet right now, and we want to make sure that that transmission is clear to them. So please do close that, turn that off. And I am going to open a work session on House Bill 2834. Representative Dembro, do you have a motion on amendments?
I do, Madam Chair.
Dash 3 amendments.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2834, dated April 7, 2009.
Representative Dembro moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendments, dated 4-7-2009. Is there any discussion on the amendments? And then we'll move on and discuss the bill. So seeing no discussion on the amendments, is there any objection to the amendments? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted. Representative Dembro, do you have a motion on the bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 2834 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Thank you. Representative Dembro moves House Bill 2834 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I won't speak for anybody else on the committee. I do have a number of concerns, and we've discussed a lot of them in the hearing. One question I had for today, and I may have more, but for right now, I was just kind of curious. I've been concerned that maybe we're rushing a little bit, and I was wondering what are the particulars, and if there are no possibilities, tell me. But making September 1, 2010. The target date for integration rather than September 1, 2009. Is that doable, or is it? What would be the reasons we can't do it, I guess?
Sure. Thank you, Representative Huffman. And I can answer first, and would let, we have a couple of school administrators that are on the committee as well that might offer some comment. And I did invite some folks that would be responsible for some of this transition here today that may be able to answer some of those questions as well. The reason that I had requested that date in drafting the amendment were a couple. The first, it needed to be at least September so that there was not a disruption to the summer program that are already planned, that are there. The second is that it really came from experience that I've had in the past, and I think Representative Roblin might be able to speak to this a little bit as well. Unfortunately, as a member of a school board in a declining enrollment district, we had the unfortunate task of needing to close several schools. And in that process, we did some where we made the closure decision in April or May, and the schools closed immediately at the end of that school year. And in another case, we did basically do the implementation date the following year. It did not work out well in that second case because it made it very difficult it was a school with declining enrollment. The declining enrollment increased because people knew that the school wasn't continuing, and it was very difficult for the students because it was a year of the last first day of school, the last first day of winter break, and it was very difficult. In terms of the ability, my understanding and experience in special education is that, I mean, each of these students already has an infrastructure that's developed around them, which is their IEP team, and every year already a placement decision has to be made at an IEP team meeting. So that's IEP teams are nimble to be able to do that, and in the cases of these particular kids, they're still the responsibility of their local school districts, and their local school districts are still part of the IEP team, so they would have a leg up even on a kid that might be moving newly to a district because they are new to the district because they've been placed in foster care, or their family has a new job, and they've moved to that part of the state. And then finally, by doing it on September 1st of 2009, we're able to best protect and have available the largest amount of resource in terms of that financial resource from the closure to follow the students back out into the districts to make sure that we're having a comprehensive, injection of whether it's professional development or technology or whatever it is that those students might need in order to be most successful. So those were some of my thoughts, and I don't know if there's other committee members that want to weigh in, and we can invite some of these other folks up as well. Representative Roblin?
Yeah, I'm speaking as a high school administrator. I was very concerned and disappointed with some of the testimony I heard about how schools had interacted with these kids in the future, and I hope that our Department of Ed and others were listening to that testimony, because there were some things that were said which, if true, bordered on almost a criminal. Now, we didn't get to hear the other side of that, so I want to make sure that people really understand that there is an obligation. It isn't a choice for a school district. And we're talking about 36 students here. There will be more than 36 students with exceptionally difficult IEPs that will be moving anyway. Every year that happens. And we're talking here about the blind population, but we have students with autism and students with other disabilities which create similar, different, but similar kinds of problems for school districts. And that happens every single year because parents move. In economies like now, it happens even more often, because what happens is people lose their jobs and they go to live with their parents or whatever, even if they've been for a long time, and they end up coming back to the family area, so whether that was a good day or whatever. And they're having so many problems. This is people not in the school, because they didn't know they were going to move. Even that, over the summer they made the decision, we're going to go back, and then they're doing all that they don't really even think about the school transition until almost the first day of school. And then they come to us, and we have an obligation. And people know that I was dyslexic and had a lot of problems and had a brother that had a lot more than I did all the way through the school system. And my parents worked in the school system, and we still had a hard time. And that was before some of these laws happened. I have a very, very strong belief that it isn't about how difficult it is. It is you will get the job done. And most administrators, and I think most school districts, if they don't, they should have. With the regional programs, they really need to clearly understand their expectation is they will develop a program that works for that child. I have told my staff when I was a principal that the best way to find out how to do that is to sit down and talk to parents, because they know their child better than anybody else does. They may not agree, they may be protective, they may do a lot of other things, but they really do know how their child learns and how they do things and what they need, and that you need to have those conversations with people and start developing the program. I think the capacity is there to do it. We've been growing that. Are there districts that don't seem to do it? We certainly heard from some stories that there sure were, and my feeling is, This, as is any time, is an opportunity to expose that and go. And I think the Department of Ed has a responsibility. I would hope, personally, that the department would hire some of these people. If we end up choosing to close the school, would hire some of the staff from the school to be a resource. I would hope that some of the regional people would hire some of these people to be a resource for school districts. But if we closed 11 schools in my district over the time that I was there. Every one of them was really horrible. Little schools in outlying parts of Coos County that had been there for years and years and years. And every time it was an emotional experience that was exceedingly hard to go through. And there were people who had generations that had gone to those schools, and they came en masse to school board meetings and to all of us to try to figure out. And every one of them was horrible. And in the final analysis, we were able to continue to provide an education for the bigger group of all the school people in the school district better because we made the decision. They weren't fun, but they were better decisions. And now we have kindergarten kids that have to sit on buses 30, 40 minutes each way. I mean, our district is very large, and we've consolidated down to the smaller group. And I don't like that for individual kids. But for the overall education, knowing where we would be without it, it is disastrous. We couldn't have afforded to have the schools. So I look at each one of these and think, how do we as state people make decisions which are going to affect all of the kids the best? And I will be one of the first people there that if I get a call from one of these parents that their kid isn't, I'll go to the school and talk to them. I mean, I'm passionate about this stuff, and I care deeply about every one of these kids. It isn't easy, but we've had, I mean, I'll tell you, the first time, and it's been a long time ago, that we had a vision-impaired child was at our school. And that's one thing you have to realize. A lot of districts haven't had many visual impaired, especially if you're a small district. We had this person come, and we found out that, you know, it's required that your steps all have these white lines on them. I don't think we'd never had anybody come and tell us that. And so we had people out the next day painting all the steps, and teachers getting upset about, that doesn't look that good. White, but it has nothing to do with that. And then we had to have that whole conversation again. So, I mean, it is a responsibility. And if you wait, I mean, some of those school closures, because of stuff, took a couple years to actually happen because they started that route and then they ended up closing this school and not that school. The schools that closed first assimilated quicker than the last ones who they were having crying and parties every time that a different event was happening. This is the last time we're going to be here for this. The last time, I mean, that was devastating for those kids, and emotionally they had a harder time assimilating later on than the others did. So for those reasons, if this is the decision of the committee, and this will be one of the hardest votes I have made in my tenure in this legislature, then if we really believe that this will benefit the majority of students, which I do, then it is, from my perspective, you need to set a deadline, you need to help those people, and we need to start talking to those school districts where these kids are coming and giving them the resources that they need. And that's why I appreciate in this bill that the money follows, because if we weren't doing that, it would be hard for me to do this. We underfund, in my opinion, the regionals, and this actually helps them be able to perform the functions they need to do. It will not be easy for any individual nor for the families, but that's where I'm at.
Follow-up, Representative Huffman?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Roblin, I appreciate your articulation, because you basically covered my concerns and what I was thinking about if we could move the date back, because some of the testimony I heard, you know, I was appalled at students being forced
shocked
to stand at the copy machine, make their own enlarged copies. And so
angry.
Part of my thinking was to make sure that the school districts and the regionals were well educated as to what we expect, and I will be quite angry if I hear of those situations. Kids being brought into the school district and stuffed into a closet out of sight, out of mind. I don't want to hear about that.
And to follow up on that, I think the word that you used, appalling, outrageous, unacceptable, what we heard described the other evening in each case was a violation of state and federal law. And when those things happen in school districts, we and the Department of Education should be holding these school districts accountable. When we get through our bills, you know, we've got our chamber deadline, so we're working our bills out of the committee, but after the end of April, we are going to be having an oversight hearing in regards to special education compliance, and we will be inviting some of the administrators from those school districts to come and talk with us about how they view their responsibilities, and so they can hear directly from us our expectation that they follow state and federal law in meeting the rights and the needs of not just these 31 students, but all of the students that are protected under the law. Absolutely unacceptable that those things happen. I've had at least one note from someone that would like to hear from some folks that would be implementing. Is that a shared desire on this timing question?
That's what I was
going to ask. Sure. So Jay and Marilyn and Mary, do you want to come on up?
Thank you.
sorry. So the question is about the implementation date, having the implementation date be September 1st of 2009 versus making the implementation date September 1st of 2010.
Representative Gelser, I'm the assistant director with Willamette ESD, and I oversee regional programs at Willamette ESD and specifically Vision. As far as moving it back.
Can you state your name for the record? You may have said it, and
I'm Mary Reed.
Okay, thank you.
As far as moving it back to 2010, I have a concern in that respect. I've been in this field for close to 30 years, 26 of those years approximately. OSB has been on the discussion list and docket for closing or staying open. As you've already discussed thoroughly, there are systems in place to implement the IEP process. The districts are responsible. They're at the table at the School for the Blind, and those need to be reviewed for placement and for services and for the actual curriculum and strategies to be applied. And that can be done, as Representative Roblin described, pretty readily and easily. It's done every year. If we waited till 2010, my concern in how I referred to my experience in this situation is that that gives time for a lot of distraught, for people to get more and more distraught, to get diverted, to get, there is an infrastructure in place that really can apply all of the things that you have discussed, and also with a legacy fund to assist with that. So the dollars would be there to assure that the expanded core curriculum, all these issues that have been brought up would be rectified with the partnership between districts and regional.
Do either of you have anything? Please, Jay.
Chair Gelser, committee members, for the record, my name is Jay Gentz. I'm the director of Columbia Regional Program. We're the region that serves the greater Portland area as well as Hood River and Wasco counties. I don't have anything to add that already wasn't added. I absolutely agree with Representative Roblin for the same reasons. The infrastructure already exists. IEP and placements continue to be the responsibility of school districts who are placing their kids at OSB, their kids at OSB. So the present IEP already is there. FAPE responsibilities are already the school district that's making the placement, so I would have concerns there. I agree that I would have concerns that the financial resources that are incorporated into following the kids into their back into their local programs would be stronger by moving forward with an 09 closure date. The most thing that concerns me is the emotional challenge that would be through a delay. I really believe that it would be harder on kids and staff to delay.
I'll be brief. My name is Marilyn Gentz, and I coordinate and supervise the Oregon Textbook and Media Center, which is the textbook braille and large print and audio for all students that are taking regular education classes, including some of the students at the School for the Blind. We produce or obtain those materials. I want to speak to that because I did hear the testimony, and we work very hard to assure that our students have textbooks in their appropriate medium at the beginning of the year or when they're starting a new semester. And so we've worked very hard, and we are probably one of the better states in making sure that kids have access to that. So we're constantly looking at ways to make sure that that happens. And I'm going to go back to our group again and say, here's some of the issues that have been presented. Another way that I believe that we will and can address that in a timely manner. We have a working group. It's called the Statewide Vision Working Group, and it's representatives of each regional program and School for the Blind and the Commission for the Blind, and that will be an issue that we will put on the forefront in terms of kids making sure they have access to their materials.
Thank you, Representative Roblin.
Yes, question for the library. You also have a vast assortment of audio materials available because or someone, if it's not you, because we were able to get stuff all the time when needed, and that came fairly quickly.
Correct. We have subscriptions to the recordings for the blind, and so we can access that very quickly. And now with technology, kids can download material like they download things to an MP3 player, so we have greater access to books And actually, that's the number one growing area. Kids like to have their materials because if they're braille readers, they can use JAWS, they can use different things to access. Yeah.
Representative Dimbro.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to say how much I appreciate your input. I'm one who has been more inclined to a 2010 implementation date. But I really appreciate the perspective that you're giving, and you're giving me pause on that. And I'd like to ask you and the chair, you know, one of the changes that's in the Dash 3 amendment, I think this is a change of the Dash 3. Anyway, it's in Section 14, and it calls for the superintendent to designate one of the regional programs to do oversight of the transition, to be the lead for oversight to the transition. And, you know, I think we're all concerned about oversight and just, you know, making sure that the kind of services that we want will be included and, you know, that this transition can be successful. So I'm wondering what you think of that and how you see that working with, you know, one of your regional sort of being the lead and being the sort of resource for parents around the state and making sure that this works because that's what we all want. Thank you.
Chair Gelser, Representative Dimbro. Jay Gentz, again, from Columbia Regional Program. I do believe that the transition planning could be incorporated. Actually, I believe that any of the regional programs would have the capacity to do that. Logistically, I would assume that we would begin by looking closely at what the home districts for those kids are and what is the regional program that actually serves those kids. For example, in our instance, for the kids who are residing in one of the districts that's in the greater Portland area or Hood River or Wasco, we have 16 FTE of teachers of vision impaired and O&M specialists with Columbia Regional Program, and we would sit down with OSB staff and with the school district staff and look very carefully at what the IEP is now, what the placement is now, and work with the parents and the families who already are part of the IEP process, as Chair Gelser already talked about at the beginning of her discussion relative to this issue. So I do think that the transition planning could be in place. And again, I would reiterate that the fact in my mind that stands out here is that the IEP that's in place at the School for the Blind is the IEP of the school district. It's their IEP. It's not an OSB IEP. They continue to be responsible for FAPE. So conceptually, nothing should change. Certainly the placement would change, and that those are the things that would have to be carefully considered. I believe that they could.
Thank you. I would like to add to that, if I could, Marilyn Gentz. I think one of the things, and we probably have an advantage because we're in Salem, and so we have a close partnership with the Oregon School for the Blind, but we have our teachers are vision impaired. If a student goes to the School for the Blind, they still remain on their caseload, so we track those students, and we stay involved with those students, so the transition back, they are knowledgeable. They are their kids still as part of the district regional program, and so I think we could make that transition.
Okay, follow up. And that, you know, what you've spoken to applies to the existing students. And one of our concerns also is future students and also that there be the ability to have special programs like, you know, summer camps and you know, other residential kinds of programs that would give students that experience. And I wonder how you see that, how you would envision that happening under this new arena, if you could speak to that.
Well, again, there's existing systems in place, and there are statewide services that are provided for autism, for severe orthopedically impaired, for traumatic brain injury. And something similar to that in reference to these kind of services, and I totally agree with you, Representative Dimbro, that some form of centralized service that would go through the Department of Education in the same format that could provide these type of services around the technology, the expanded core curriculum, the transition, you know, apartment living type of things, which could be out in the regions, but also a centralized component of that. We, I think, are in agreement that these are students that are so low incident that they do need to have time together and it involved in activities and programs. And I don't think what's happening here precludes that. In fact, I think it enhances the partnership between a centralized system and regionals to implement such an approach.
I have some thoughts on that also, and I'll just share briefly my thoughts. But I believe through the position or positions that are allocated in the bill that we could have staff that were designated to plan like a year plan or a length of time plan that gives opportunities for kids to come together. And I think of all the testimony, that it to me is the most compelling, that you do need to be able to be around people that understand your vision and how you operate. You do need an opportunity to be successful. And so I think it could be, based on the needs of kids, it would be adaptable. So, because kids change and their needs can't change, but you have a group of kids, let's say they're in the Portland area, you might provide opportunities in the Portland area. For outlying areas, if there's isolated kids and they don't have that opportunity, with the funding the way it appears to be set up, you could bring people together for a week, a month, rent apartments, do things that you need to do based on the needs of the students. And I think that would be a more adaptable center or school than what we currently have.
Is Morgan still here, Alan?
He just walked out.
I guess one of the things that I'm wondering is, as this planning happens, and some of that will be described by rule, and the rulemaking body comes together, would there be the ability to incorporate the members of the advisory board, the current advisory board of the Oregon School for the Blind, in that ongoing planning about how services are delivered across the state? I think, you know, one of the things that I've heard and become very convinced of is the quality of the vision that this group has and the dedication they have to the future of the students in this state, and finding a way to be able to continue to capture that energy and that expertise and that commitment, I think, is very important carrying forward. I don't think it's, I mean, clearly it's attached to the School for the Blind, but it's bigger. What they have to offer is much bigger than that. It's in addition to.
Madam Chair, that was my next question too.
And I guess, Morgan, can I invite you?
I just wanted to back up and talk a little bit about regionals being able to provide the apartment living skills and others. On the campus at our high school, for a number of years, we had a house, and it was used for some of the multiple handicap classes, but as their place where they did a lot of the work. But it was also used, the ESD in our district that did some of the regional programs. It was used on weekends and other times to bring kids from other districts around and learn how to manage the house, do the cooking, do the other stuff. And it was, I mean, we're in a fairly poor, high-needs district in Coos Bay. But it existed for a number of years. They've gone to different ways of doing that, but there is a understanding that regionals need to do that. And having been involved with a number of the groups that work with Special Olympics and getting kids together for activities and spending a lot of time at our track and our other things, they brought those regional things together. We need to strengthen that. I mean, I think for a while we lost some of that, but we need to continue to strengthen the opportunities to get people together and to have places like that house and apartment living, because there are 800 and some kids who need those experiences, not just the 30. And I know a lot of them came for short stays to the School of the Blind, but I contend that you can do that in regional deals and not have to travel that far from home and do it for short periods of time and then for a little bit longer. But we need to develop that kind of system within our regionals.
So Morgan, I had, thanks for coming back in the room. It's the second time I've done this to you this week. In terms of this bill, if this bill were to pass and the bill calls for the superintendent to designate a program to be a lead program. There would be staff there. Clearly, there would need to be administrative rules that would be developed around how that center would work, the mechanics of the distribution of the funds from the legacy fund. What can we do, and how can we send a clear message to the department, and how can you assure us that you've heard us in terms of incorporating into that rulemaking group members of the Oregon School for the Blind Advisory Board?
Chair Gelser, for the record, Morgan Allen with the Department of Education. So you're referring to the section where we're designating one of the regional programs to manage the distribution of the legacy funds.
Yes, I am.
And whether or not we would need to make rules around that, and the State Board would need to adopt administrative rules. I would need to confer with our legal affairs coordinator to see what kind of rules may need to be put in place. But if it was determined that there were administrative rules necessary, our agency is a little bit different than most other agencies in that there's an added layer of public testimony and protection, if you will, when those rules are developed, because the State Board has to approve them. As an agency, we can't just unilaterally adopt administrative rules like some other agencies can. The State Board of Education has to put the final stamp of approval on our rules. So, we'd be happy to sort of listen to what the concerns of the committee are, and I would make a commitment that, whatever you guys were concerned about, we could probably address that in rulemaking. I don't see why we couldn't if it was determined that that was necessary.
Thank you. Representative Comp, you've been in the queue.
Yes, thank you, Chair Gelser. I want to make a comment about teachers. I was very fortunate to teach special needs students at the high school level. And in the time that I did that, what I was able to do was to observe a tremendous amount of other teachers dealing with multitudes and multitudes of differences of students. But I'm a little biased, I'll admit that, but I have never seen a more passionate group of educators than those that serve students with special needs. They will move mountains to provide for their needs. It was really, really difficult to listen to some of the testimony the other night, to hear that schools had let their children down. I just know the educators in the field will do their job.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A point and then a question. I just wanted to point out that a question or a comment that I made the other night on the dash twos on the maximum value of the property, I appreciate you getting that in there. On page 7, section 9, it addresses the maximum value portion. A question that I have, probably for Mary, is future staffing. It's my understanding that a very possibly untimely situation of a program at PSU or PCC for, I guess it's blind and visually impaired, is going to be closing or shutting down. Is that true? And what might the plans, where do you think we'll get our educators?
That's a good question, and I just got through writing an email to the provost of Portland State University about the recent work that's been a combination between Columbia Regional, Northwest Regional ESD, and Willamette ESD, and Washington School for Blind and Oregon School for Blind in order to enhance that program. Right now it's a 6-month delay, and I'm feeling pretty positive about the fact of stopping that type or at least maintaining it 6 months down the road, in that they do have a cost neutral program right now. It's not losing them any money, but it will lose not only Oregon but our nation because of the low incident nature. We usually do, when we recruit, we'll recruit nationally. And we have teachers of the visually impaired and orientation mobility specialists from all around the nation that work in our programs, not just Oregon. But we do have a good percentage that come from Portland State. And we want to maintain that program. We want to work closely with them. There are as I understand, at the Oregon School for the Blind, we have some teachers of visually impaired and orientation mobility specialists that are available, and so it wouldn't really look too much different than what it currently looks for us every year.
Madam Chair, that just came to my attention, and I don't know if that's something that we might want to follow up with a letter or appropriate action of some sort explaining to them what we're in the process of doing.
So are you thinking a letter from the committee to President Vivel?
I don't know what's appropriate, but
we could do that.
Why not?
We could do that. Is there further discussion? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If nothing else, this process has, I think, given all of us more than just a snapshot of some of the strengths and, unfortunately, a lot of the weaknesses that we see in, I guess you'd say, the IEP process. I don't think I'll get in too much trouble, but I may have an apology to deliver tonight at home. I've sat through IEP meetings with my son, quite frankly, I consider myself to be pretty well equipped. I sit on the board of the school district he's in. I know all the players. I know the experts. I know who's the best at every little piece. Have a great relationship with the school. All the pieces are very good for us in that process. Yet, it is still a difficult process. And I consider our family to be well equipped. And so I look at that, and sometimes I walk out of there frustrated, and a lot of it's just the process. And we're working with wonderful people, and I never want it to get back that anybody who sat at that table is less than a friend. But because I know them, that's unique. Number one, that's unique. And number two, I'm in a unique position to have all those tools. And this process, I think, should give us all pause that we need to look, and this isn't an opportunity to take a stab at folks doing stuff in schools, but there's got to be a way to make this process better for families and better for folks. Because it's hard to navigate if you have a full toolbox. It's impossible to navigate if you have an empty toolbox or just a few tools in it. And I think that should give us all pause to look at that for a moment.
I absolutely agree.
Representative Brooklyn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess just a comment. When we have these kinds of difficult conversations to take place, it's always interesting, in my life at least, as this dyslexic ADHD kid that grew up to do this, that no matter what difficult situation, different things happen that kind of remind me of what I have to do. And this week happened to be my birthday, and a lot of people were very kind. But in that midst of that, my wife brought 75 students from her elementary school, along with some teachers and parents, to visit the Capitol. And I was surprised because one of the parents who came on this trip was a young woman who at the high school when I was the principal was one of the people in our severely handicapped classroom. I mean, she had intellectual issues, and it was a difficult thing for her. And she got involved in Special Olympics, and I remember helping out at Special Olympics and seeing her. And I knew her very well at the school. And I was shocked when here she was, being a parent, escorting these kids around, and I said to my wife, "How does she is she doing?" And she said, "She does really well. These are her kids, and they're doing pretty well." And I said, "You know, it is really gratifying to see that our system worked to allow this person to have this more complete life." And she was excited to see me. It was kind of like seeing her when she was in high school. And she came in the office, and she wanted to say, and I thought, you know, this is why we do this stuff, is to give people who... My mother, when I was in college, helped when Washington transitioned away from having everybody in the state schools and put them back into regional programs in their home as young adults. And I was required when I came home by my mom to go and work with these young adults, learn skills about getting around in the community. And I realized that a number of them should never have been institutionalized, and we had done a really horrible thing in our history of our society with respect to people with disabilities. And I thought the difference between these people who I had gotten to work with when I was a 20-year-old getting out of an institution and this young woman who came here as one of the chaperones for all these kids with her own children was probably the biggest stark difference that I've ever seen with regard to understanding why we're doing what we're doing, why it is important to put people back into regular schools and communities and to try to get the most out of them. The horror stories that we heard the other night made me angry, but it didn't. I got refocused and realized, no, it's the right thing. We need to do this, and we need to help make sure that everybody has the opportunities they need to progress where they need to in our local schools, because we want these people in our communities to be functioning and doing stuff. And we had a young lady who was probably the most impressive woman I have ever met, who was deaf and wanted to be at the regular high school and wanted to take calculus and didn't want to go to a school that wasn't going to give her the things that she wanted to do. And by golly, the school was going to make sure it happened, and her parents were going to make sure it happened. And I watched this young woman get on a dance team, and she couldn't hear, but she could feel the music, and so she could do it, and then cheer team, and then calculus. And we had to find people who knew how to sign calculus. That was really difficult, I will tell you, in Coos Bay, Oregon. But they got there because they were going to get there with her. And she will be successful in college, and she will be successful in life. And she would not, I don't believe, been as successful if we had made the decision that she wouldn't be in a regular school, but she was going to go. I've seen too many cases where they settle for less than what they do. We have an obligation as schools to open this up. And seeing that young woman with her family yesterday clarified in my mind that what we're doing is trying to help every one of the citizens and these kids get to their full potential. And I think you can do that at home. I'm still having a hard time because I watched how happy those kids are at the school. I just want them to be that happy and that successful in other places too. So that's just a comment. Thank you for the opportunity.
Are there any further questions or further discussion? Representative Van Orman?
I would like to, thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to underscore what Representative Roblin said about money. There is no doubt that money matters in this business, and the disparity in the funding, I think, does affect what we're able to do at the local level. And I'm thinking that had we had the same amount of money at the local level, we might have the same outcomes and the same loyalty. The other thing I would also like to underscore is what Representative Springer has said, because I know from my experience that it is helpful for the parents that we served that one of our teachers was one of their resources in that process. So it's just real clear to me, having tried to deliver services, money does matter.
Your discussion? So before we take the vote, thank you all very much. First, I wanted to thank the committee for the attention and the consideration and the wrestling that you have given to this issue. I know that it has not been easy. I particularly appreciate your attentiveness on the night hearings that we have had. I can't think of another committee that I have been part of that's gone at nighttime that has had people sit and stay and be so attentive the entire time. And I am so grateful to each of you for doing that. This has been a very difficult process and a very difficult issue for everyone that's involved, and for as difficult as it's been for us, it can't match how difficult this has been for the families that are impacted by this decision, for the dedicated board and staff at the Oregon School for the Blind, and I am deeply appreciative of their ongoing openness and willing to continue to engage in conversation no matter how difficult those conversations are. If we pass this bill, it is my expectation that on the other side of this, that the Department of Education, that the regional programs, that whatever office it is, wherever that lives, that continue to engage this community and that these students' needs will be met. And I think the last thing is that there is no question that the students who are today at the Oregon School for the Blind are having an experience that they treasure and that is very beneficial to them and that has been beneficial to their families. And there is no question of the quality of instruction and support that is offered by the staff at the school. What's happening in this closure, there is nothing that any of these students, that this family, that these families, that the staff, that the board have done wrong. And in fact, I think we land here from decades of neglect that started when I was actually a fairly small child. But here we are today, and I know it's a hard vote for everyone, and thank you again for considering it so carefully. And with that, Debbie, would you please call the roll?
Representative Parker?
Yes.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Kong?
Aye.
Representative Maurer?
No.
Representative Roland?
Yes.
Representative Thatcher?
No.
Representative Van Orman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Denbrough?
Aye.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
And Chair Gelzer?
Aye. The motion passes, and the bill is sent as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you all very much for your very careful attention, and the House Committee on Education is adjourned.